time to take a listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them in Ocean View Road, Oniroa. Last Saturday, Sharim Brown talked to Muriel Watts about pesticide spraying, Sonic artist John Panther and Richard Burke from the Anglican Church about the beach races and much more.
Right, well, here we are with Muriel Watts from the Pesticide Action Network. I should point out that this has been a special request from one of our listeners who took photographs of people spraying the Cable Bay vines from her house, and she was a little bit concerned, so she put a filter on her water tank. And so I think she was quite interested in finding out what is the story with people spraying their vines, what can we do about it, and what are the risks to us given the fact that we collect water in water tanks. So I've got with me Muriel Watts, who's an expert on poisoning and pesticides. She's with the Pesticide Action Network. Hi Muriel, how are you doing? So would you like to tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, I'm a scientist for Pesticide Action Network, which is an international organisation of about 600 and more NGOs right around the world. And I work particularly for the Asia-Pacific region based in Malaysia.
Oh, okay, lovely. And so what do you make of all this spraying of vines?
Well, I think it's actually a considerable problem on Waiheke. Coincidentally, as I was on my way here this morning, I stopped into Placemakers and a chap there asked me what he could do about it. He lives surrounded by vineyards, and every time they spray, he gets sick. He gets the classical symptoms of fatigue, feeling really lousy, dizziness and confusion, and he has to go to bed. This is actually very, very common. He had already had poisoning many years ago, so he's become what is known as chemically sensitive. So a very small amount of exposure to pesticides from the vineyards are seriously affecting him, and this is not uncommon on the island. A number of people have told me this. So really, the vineyard spraying is becoming a serious problem. It's a problem partly because of the way the island was planned, and we have vineyards right amongst houses. In fact, we had the houses first often, and the vineyards came along. Vineyards claim the right to spray, and everybody else claims the right to not be sprayed upon. So, I mean, that's a planning problem. But as a community, we have to deal with that issue. And really, the only way we can deal with it is by the vineyards changing their practices.
Right, but okay, and what would that involve?
Well, I'll come to that in a minute, but first of all, I just want to talk a little bit about some of the chemicals that are being used, and there's two in particular that really bother me. One is a fungicide called Maneb. Maneb is on the Pesticide Action Network list of highly hazardous pesticides for a global phase-out, and that is because it is carcinogenic, it causes cancer, and it's an endocrine disruptor. It's actually quite a nasty chemical, and the fact that it is being used on vineyards on the island is a real concern. It's a particular problem for children and the unborn fetus, so pregnant women and young children should be nowhere near that spray. And these sprays can drift for quite a way. The other chemical that really bothers me is the very commonly used Roundup. It's used on vineyards, and it's actually used all over the place on the island by lots of people controlling weeds in their bush and everywhere else.
Including my landlord, who uses it all over the driveway when my kids are about to play.
There's no excuse for that, actually. And people have this misguided view that Roundup is safe because the chemical company that introduced it, Monsanto, has done a very good PR job. And they've told everybody for years it is, and somehow people have gotten to believe them. But I've just published a 50-page document collecting together all the scientific evidence on Roundup, and I can assure you it is not safe. There's good evidence it can cause cancer, and in particular non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and there's been some cases of that on the island amongst people who have used Roundup a lot. It interferes with endocrines, in particular progesterone, an important female hormone, implicated in breast cancer and in reproductive issues particularly. So again, it's something that women on this island should be nowhere near Roundup.
So when we say nowhere near, what does that mean? They shouldn't be spraying it themselves?
They shouldn't be spraying it, and they shouldn't be exposed to spray drift.
Now, sprays
can drift for a very long distance, and I would say anyone who's using it on this island, unless they've got it in a completely enclosed system, which you can't do with a herbicide, they will be causing some spray drift, which is inevitably going off their property and onto someone else's, into the air, into water systems, and probably most of us on the island are being exposed to it at one stage or another.
Right. And have you got any statistics on how much Roundup you would need to be exposed to? Like, if a neighbour uses it once a year, is that really a problem? Or if he uses it every month? Or
it's really difficult to answer that. The problem is that we are sensitive to it, particularly sensitive to it at critical times. Pregnant women, during that time of pregnancy, and particularly the first 3 months, are critically sensitive to very low doses of hormone-disrupting chemicals, of which Roundup is one. It can take, so with endocrine disruption, it can take only one exposure to a tiny, minute amount to cause changes in the fetus that will affect that fetus for the rest of their life in terms of their intellectual development, their behavioural development, and possibly also cancer later in life. For example, breast cancer, there's quite good evidence now that breast cancer is beginning really early in life, often in fetal life, but not developing and not showing signs of it till 20, 30, 40 years later.
Crikey. Right.
So it is a serious issue.
And have you got statistics on a slightly different topic? But I feel that New Zealand, there are a lot of women who get breast cancer quite early in life in relation to other places. Like, I've met a lot of, you know, women in their 20s and 30s who've already lost a breast or had quite intensive cancer treatment. And do you feel that's perhaps linked to this, or am I just imagining that?
It's impossible to tell if it's linked or not, but I think you're on the right track. New Zealand has the second or third highest rate of breast cancer in the world, actually second only to the USA. Both here in New Zealand and elsewhere, the age of breast cancer onset is reducing. We are getting more and more and more young women and young girls getting breast cancer. The belief is that a lot of that has been caused by exposure to hormone-disrupting chemicals and also to other things that create an estrogenic environment in women, because estrogen is implicated in this whole process of getting breast cancer. So things that elevate our natural level of estrogen will cause us to get breast cancer earlier, and chemicals, including pesticides, is one of those, but there are dietary implications as well, and alcohol, but that's a different issue. So that's part of the scenario. Here on Waiheke, many of us of my age, I have a lot of friends who've had breast cancer, or have breast cancer, and we have been concerned about what appears to be a high level on Waiheke. We don't have statistics to back it up because our record keeping in New Zealand in this respect is so poor. But certainly there is a concern about the high levels on Waiheke.
Oh, okay, interesting. So just playing devil's advocate, I mean, yes, people who are a bit tired or a bit stressed and they're a bit fatigued and they spend the afternoon in bed, I mean, why are you necessarily linking that to pesticides?
You can't say it for any one particular person, but you can take a broad view and look at what's happened to people. And this is a well-known fact both in New Zealand and the US and some of the European countries, where a lot of research has been done into this by medical people testing their, taking case studies of their clients. They have found there's a very strong relationship between it. Using alternative methods of healing, you can actually sometimes identify the chemicals involved. Conventional medicine doesn't have an answer to this. It doesn't have a way of diagnosing it often, or of making the link, or of actually providing a cure either. So it's something that alternative medicines have had to take the initiative in, but also just good old-fashioned case study analysis has shown that there is a very strong link there.
And what can people do if they think that they have been poisoned?
Oh golly, that's a difficult one. You need to find a practitioner, and I'm not talking about a general medical practitioner at this point. I'm talking about an alternative medical practitioner who can provide help. And I really can't at this point identify to, it's not appropriate for me to say which practitioners to go to.
You would find an alternative, a naturopath or a homeopath, for?
Yes, exactly. And along those lines, or electroacupuncture is another way of doing it as well. And there are good practitioners, for example, in Orewa, who can help with that. The objective really, though, is not to have to treat a problem after it's happened. The objective is to stop it happening. People should not be being put in this position of becoming ill from somebody else's sprays, simply because the law at the moment allows people to use sprays in this way and in the process make people sick. As I said, we're a community on this island, we're a small community. We have to learn to work together to stop this problem happening.
So what is the solution? I mean, if you live as this lady does, she lives next to a vineyard, she looks out one morning and they're out there with the tractors and the guy's got a face mask on and there's a cloud of spray around his head. What What can she do? I mean, she didn't even know it was happening.
Yeah, the first thing to do is quickly disconnect your water supply, shut the windows of your house and get out. That's all you can do when it gets to that point. That's at the end of the road. But I'd like to start at the beginning of the road. What we should be doing on this island is working with all of our vineyards and our olive growers to go organic. We have very good organic vineyards on the island already. We have Awaroa out at Beyond Onitangi, who have been organic for many, many years, and they sell really good wine. They are not certified. There's Kennedy Point that is currently just about to get its organic certification. They sell good wine. Stony Ridge claim to be organic, but they're not certified. So what I'm saying is that we have good, long-established vineyards on this island who have shown that you can go grow good grapes and make good wine on this island purely organically. Now, there's no reason why every other vineyard on the island doesn't do the same. All it will do for them is create a premium for their wine and better wine. So that's the first thing, is to go organic. If there are growers who feel that they just can't do it for some, I mean, there's plenty of expertise around that can help growers do this. If there are growers who still think this is beyond their ability, there are sprayers that you can get in Europe that are called tunnel sprayers, and they go completely over the row of vines. So they enclose the vines, and then they come around the bottom. So when the vines are sprayed, the spray goes into each side of the enclosed sprayer and is collected at the bottom and recycled. So spray doesn't escape.
And is that available to New Zealand?
Yes, it is. It is. There's no reason why. I mean, it might be slightly expensive, but you know, we're talking about people's health here. No expense is too much. So they can, if that equipment's not available in the country, they can import it really easily. If you're going to spray, that's really the only acceptable way to spray. So you're not allowing spray drift to escape into the air. I've also got a neighbour nearby who sprays, and I've seen the clouds of it going about. So, I mean, that's not acceptable. So that's number two approach. Number three approach is to notify your neighbours when you're going to spray. Before that, number three approach is to make sure when you are going to spray is to spray when the wind is blowing away from houses. Then the people in those houses are not being exposed. Now, there's some problems in places like Seaview Road where there's vineyards and houses all over the place. People there shouldn't be spraying at all. It's just really not acceptable for that level of exposure to be happening to the people around about the vineyards. So number four is to notify people when you are spraying so that people have the option to get out if they have to. But let's go back to the top. They shouldn't be spraying.
Right.
They don't need to.
Okay, so they don't need to, but having said that, the onus is all on the grower to identify it as a problem, to stop doing it, to notify the neighbours, to choose a time of day when they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Okay, but as an individual, there's no recourse that I've got to say, look, you know, I've got a family here, I'm pregnant, this isn't good for my family, this isn't good for my water system.
You can say that, and I'm very happy to provide information to anybody who wants it, to use and talking to their neighbours. The first approach is to talk to the neighbours nicely, not antagonistically. We've talked to our neighbours and we've said, look, we're certified organic growers, which we are, and we sell at the local market. Please don't spray when the wind is coming in our direction, and they haven't, which is great. So first step is to actually have a good relationship with the neighbours and do that, if you can. Doesn't always work, but it's worth trying. Provide them with the information why it's a problem, etc.
So are you quite involved with wine growers?
Not at the moment, but I have asked our local ones not to spray when the wind's coming our way, and they have been. I have been involved with them in the past.
Okay, so do you have any ideas on the costs? I mean, you know, a lot of people fall back on the fact that spraying protects their plants and is a cheaper way to go than maybe organic sprays or not spraying or whatever. Is that an argument, or is that just knowing enough about something?
Both of those things. It's not knowing enough about it, but it's also somewhat of a selfish argument. If you think that you have the right to use sprays because it might cost you a bit less, even though it's going to affect other people, that's not a terribly good approach. But that is unfortunately the approach a lot of people take. And they hide behind the fact that the sprays are legally allowed to be used and our planning rules allow them to be used. And they say, therefore, it's okay for me to do it. And legally they can do it. But the problem is that they need to acknowledge that we are a small community and people are getting affected by it. And they and we are all part of the same community.
And what about the landscape gardeners?
Yes, that's another problem. Again, there's this, many of them still believe that Roundup is okay to use. Not all landscape gardeners do it, some don't. But they all believe that, that Roundup is, a lot of them believe that Roundup is safe, and it simply isn't. And again, if anybody wants the information from me, I'm very happy to give it to them.
Well, I was quite appalled because my landlord came one day and sprayed without me knowing it. And then I let my children play where they had sprayed. And it was only when I saw everything die 10 days later that I'd realised what had happened. And so I was quite appalled.
Yeah, that's grossly irresponsible of the landlord.
Trying to communicate that to him has been quite difficult, though. And yeah, my children were tired around, very tired around that time, and then I didn't know, well, is it a bug? Or, you know, it's really hard to pin down, is it flu, what's going on? But my son, I know, was, you know, and now I'm thinking, oh, well, maybe there was something in that. But it's really hard to know, isn't it?
It is, because often the symptoms are very similar to flu or you know, or being run down, and people think, oh, I'm just run down, or I'm tired, or I've got the flu, when in fact, what you're experiencing is the tip of an iceberg, because we're only really aware of the acute symptoms when we feel tired, nauseous, got a headache. What really is of concern is those chronic symptoms, the underlying ones that we don't know are happening, like the development of cancer that comes out many years later, or the influence on our endocrine system or our immune system.
So what options, because I'm also sympathetic to the fact, you know, he is a landscape gardener, and, you know, the returns on what he does are probably not huge, you know, huge. And, you know, he wants to get the weeds out the driveway. And so what options are available to him in what he does?
Well, it very much depends on the situation. There are sprays that are non-chemical, like the pine oil and the coconut oil. The council uses pine oil on our roadsides.
And are you happy with the and the pine oil is safe?
That doesn't seem to be too much of a problem. I prefer people not to be exposed to anything of a concentrated like nature like that unless they have to be. It is preferable to Roundup. There are steam weeders. There are infrared burners that you can get. So there are other ways of controlling weeds than simply spraying a chemical on them. We have weeds in our driveway too. Actually, I mow them. I'm sure a landscaper doesn't want to do that. But, you know, it's the easiest thing for us.
No, indeed. Okay.
Part of the problem is we have to get over worrying about this appearance of a weed. Does it matter that much?
Well, I think what's interesting is that he stuck this stuff all over the front of the garden, and the plants that he's trying to protect, the so-called grasses and, you know, trees and whatever, are looking, frankly, quite manky.
Actually, that's a really interesting point that I should have mentioned earlier. One of the things that has been found in the last 5 years that Roundup does to plants is it encourages fungal disease. One of the way Roundup kills plants, the ones that are supposed to kill, is by generating fungal disease in their roots. Now, we have a problem with fungal diseases in grapevines anyway. All the spraying that's going on around the island is probably helping to create other fungal diseases in other plants as well. It's widely known in North America, where they have done massive spraying of Roundup and genetically modified crops, that the crops are dying at a far greater rate of fungal diseases than they ever did before. It's a root rot called Phytophthora, for those who want to know.
Oh, okay. Oh dear, right. And any, well, you might know something, moving just on a little bit to something slightly different. Any news on genetically modified plants and the growing of them in the South Island? Is that anything you know about?
I must admit, I try to keep out of it, not because I don't hold the view along with most of the rest of the country that we shouldn't be doing this, but simply because the amount of time and effort is needed to keep up to date with pesticide problems doesn't leave me a lot of time to keep up to date with genetic engineering, and I prefer not to talk about something I'm not fully conversant with.
No, that's fair enough. Time taken on issues, yes, the super city is the one that seems to be taking a lot of my time at the moment. But
well, actually, you know, this is a real problem for us too. Auckland Central and Devonport, North Shore, have had no Roundup spraying on their roadsides for many, many years because of the work that we activists did many years ago. It took 13 years to stop Auckland spraying, including Waiheke having Roundup on our roadsides. The super city poses a major threat to that. We face, actually, now, having that policy chucked out when we have a new super city combining with all the other regions, and having Roundup spraying back on our roadsides by November.
So how is that possible? How does the super city make something like that
simply
possible?
Simply because we have an Auckland City Council policy, there's a Manukau City Council policy, there's a Waitakere and North Shore, etc. And all of those policies are probably going to become one big super city policy. So whose policy gets adopted?
I see, right.
It may not be ours. It may be, but it may not be. So it's just a little bit of a wake-up call to people on the island who are concerned about this, that we may soon lose our non-chemical weed management on our roadsides if we're not very careful.
Mm. Okay. Well, so if people want to know more about Pesticide Action Network or Roundup,
yes,
or how to approach their neighbours to talk to them about spray drift from Roundup or vinery spraying, can they get hold of you,
yes,
or is there a number they can...
They can email me at Meriel Watts, that's one word, Meriel Watts, at extra.co.nz.
Lovely. Thank you, Meriel, for coming in.
Thanks very much.
Okay, well, we've got John Panther, Audiotopsy, coming in to talk to us now. Well, he's here
now. Good morning, Sharon, and good morning, people.
Good morning. And, well, John was a DJ on Waiheke Radio, but now he's off to study at university. So we're just listening to some of the stuff that he's played as part of his Audiotopsy show, but maybe with a little bit of an explanation. So, John, what is it that you do?
Well, jolly good question. I've been asking myself that one for a long time, and often I haven't got a suitable answer for that, really. But, umpteen years on and off, dabbling in music and dabbling in sonic arts and all the rest of it.
What does that mean, sonic arts?
Mm, very good question, and that's, it's people, how do you explain that one? And I suppose the best way I can say it is, if you think in terms of musicality, which is what most people consider, is most people's familiarity. Now, that occupies a small zone of the sonic arts. It deals with pitch alteration and meter and rhythm over a timeline.
So what are you talking, like classical music, pop songs, rock, the usual stuff that people listen to
what
on a radio station?
Yeah, what we call music is basically dealing with pitch and meter. Now, that is one small aspect of it all. There's a very large palette outside of that where you don't have to really work within pitch or any of those traditional notions of metering at all.
Have you got an example of that? Or?
Well, actually, I will slightly go off because it's rather like saying to, Your Honour, it's rather like saying, going up to a navigator in the cockpit of a 747, saying, "Oh my God, the carburetor in the Rolls Royce engine is screwed. Could you go and fix it, please?" It's a very broad church. So, actually, what I was doing for the show here on Radio Waiheke was working with Plunderphonics and because I'm actually a very good little Kiwi and I believe in recycling old rubbish. I thought it'd be rather fun to take bits of old stuff that I found floating around and recycle it into something else.
Right, and Plunderphonics, is that what that is?
Plunderphonics is about basically taking notions or taking items of recognisable musical forms, recognisable bits of structure, and creating something else out of it, really. And the idea, it's supposed to be humorous. You're supposed to actually look for a sense of humour there. Particularly in musicality in the sonic arts, a sense of humour is something that's been sadly lacking. We all seem to take it terribly seriously. So I thought, for this show that I was doing, let's just have a good old laugh.
Okay, lovely. Mm. So would you like to play something?
Well,
or maybe tell us what it is before you play
it?
What it's plundered from, maybe?
Yes. Okay. Let's think. We could start off with... Shall I start off and be a little bit political?
Yeah, go on.
Don't
do that for a show, please.
I know, that's shocking. That's very un-me. But hey, what the hell. It was during... what's the American administration for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs? When Hills was in Pakistan trying to sort out the ongoing Third World War that no one's ever going to sort out. And I thought, oh dear, here we go. So And at the same time as that, I was, working on a film called Plan B. And the director of FEMDAR was suggesting that perhaps they might, the main piece of music might have a Mission Impossible feel to it. So I was analysing the score and the MIDI score for the theme to Mission Impossible, which subsequently wasn't actually used at all. So basically, I was pulling all these bits: Hill's interview with the BBC, the Waiheke film that I was working on, and basically just having a bit of a laugh. Really.
Oh, sounds really interesting. So we're just going to play that for you.
Chief of Staff General Kiani and the director of ISI, General Pasha, last night, and we had a broad-ranging, in-depth discussion. So I am certainly encouraged by their commitment to this struggle that they are waging.
Said,
I believe that there is a great commitment
Just a reminder, right now your voicemail box is set up so that it won't accept new messages. You have no new messages. To find out more about voicemail...
John Panther, an original composition, I believe. So, John, that's really
quite
interesting.
Not actually. It was basically plagiarising and plundering everything in existence, really. But sorry. Yeah.
And so that sounds like something like me waking up in the middle of the night and having lots of thoughts and sounds and things coming into my head.
Yes, well, I felt like making a response to US foreign policy, and basically I thought that pretty much summed up where Hillary's with it or with they're all at it and where it's likely to end up, really. And I believe musicality, sonic arts, it's the most abstract form of artistic expression. So I think, well, let's actually really push the boat out and see how abstract we can become with it. And so it's about connecting with other parts of consciousness, connecting with other parts of memory, I think. And it's certainly the visual artists gave up dealing with realism and figurative over 100 years ago. And we seem to actually be able to cope with those notions when we're dealing with visual art. But when it comes to sonic art, we're pretty much stuck in a small sphere. So, yeah, it's about basically dealing with abstract form, but I think humour is terribly important because it can all get a bit serious and ponderous, can't it, really?
I love that juxtaposition of the answer phone message with the Hillary Clinton. And you'd also fooled around with how she was saying things, so you seem to have at some point stretched out what she was
saying. That's right. Well, I thought that sort of summed up, really, how they feel about the whole situation.
Oh, okay. No, really interesting. So what's the forum in which this can be played? I mean, obviously the radio, you can play a couple of tracks and then start throwing things at the windows and stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Please don't do that, but, you know.
No doubt it's not really for commercial radio at Saturday morning.
You know, no, but it's a feature, so it's probably all right. Yeah. You know, we'll get away with it. Yeah.
You think the director of Waiheke Radio isn't going to fire you for this?
Well, I hope not. Yeah. Okay.
Forum,
well,
yeah.
Should we try something else? Something that's perhaps a little different?
Yes, well, I can answer your question. I mean, the forum for it is basically... It's a cross between performance and site-specific installation. And, it is pretty much a marginal audience. It is for those who are looking to listen. They want to stretch, listening for different things, looking in new places and wanting to listen differently. But hopefully it's a bit of humour.
Lovely. Well, shall we try another track? What would you like to play from this
I think,
now?
Yeah, I think what would be rather interesting is, as I say, part of... Because I did want to deal with local issues and deal with what's going on locally. And I was working on the soundtrack of a film called Plan B.
never-ending experience.
Yeah. So I put together an interpretation of that soundtrack. Again, I was going through the archives of bits of old this, that, and half the other that was... left over on the E drive here in the radio station, and I came across an interview between Emma Boyer Warner and Di Stoddard. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. So basically, all the stuff that normally ends on the cutting room floor ended up as part of the piece. So here we have a mashup of Neptune Theatre on Air, Waiheke Radio, and Plan B, Femdar.
Everything's under control.
Okay, so...
Well, everything's not quite under control, but who cares?
So that was a bit of John Panther with something that he'd composed.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's back to our discussion. It's recycling. I love the stuff that's... I have a fascination for the stuff that's usually flung in the recycle bin that's on, or what they used to say on the cutting room floor, all the stuff that's discarded as rubbish. I think it has great potential to be recycled into humour, into entertainment, and can sometimes even say stuff. So basically that was a piece Waiheke Radio creativity that was being recycled, really, and a lot of stuff that would normally end up discarded. And hopefully there's a... I know there's an element of in-house humour there for people who are aware of the actual pieces of work concerned. So one has to be a bit careful not to go too far down that line. But nonetheless, hopefully it's a little bit humorous.
Yeah, well, I think it was quite interesting because you can hear the voice of those the bits from the DJ that have been cut out of the interview. And then there are little bits of the soundtrack of the film. And then there are little bits of...
sitcom.
Yeah, sitcom stuff. Yes. And So can anyone do this, or does it is it an art, or is it just someone sitting at home? Do you need any talent to do that, John?
Ah, well, isn't that the eternal question? What's art? It's like anything in life. Anyone can do it, can't they, really? It's a case of, are you actually saying anything that interests are you grabbing anyone? Does anyone actually want to hear it, really? But I suppose the simple answer to it is, yeah, I would hope that anyone can do it, because I think we have to get over this notion of the elitism of art. Yeah, I think art's a bit of a dirty word. I mean, who was it who said Kunst ist tot? Have I pronounced that correctly? Art is dead.
Right. Okay.
You know, and I suppose the punk ethic in the '70s was a part of that, and that's how I started off life. Really, I was a great believer in the punk ethic. It was about putting the fingers up to established notions of what art is, really.
Mm. Well, I think what's interesting for me is it really challenges my idea of what's interesting to listen to, and I think this stuff it's an interesting listening experience. It's not particularly easy.
No.
Because you're not sure what it is that you're listening to, and it's lots of random sounds put together, so you actually have to concentrate.
No, that's a very crucial point that you brought up there, which is a kind of a motive that I have, is I do not believe in comfort zone or creating easy listening for an audience to passively sit back. I think as a member of an audience, you should actually make the effort to engage in what you're listening in, and you might not necessarily understand it, or might not even like it. You might think, gosh, what a pile of S. But I think it's about making that effort to figure out what may be going on, or simply just being confused. Nothing wrong with being confused. It just keeps you on your toes.
So let's talk about this next track then. It's called Palm Beach. What's all that about?
It comes from a tradition of musique concrète. I mean, using real-world sounds as your composition palette, which actually goes back to a movement in France in the 1930s. Musique concrète is when people first started playing with notions of sonic painting and not using pitch, not using traditional notions of picture, and using real world sounds. pardon me. I would often find myself on my deck of an evening in Palm Beach listening to the environment, and I was just intrigued to try and actually paint that picture, not by capturing the sounds of reality itself, but actually creating it from any old bit of rubbish I could find, from sound effect catalog, from just any old trying to paint a picture from a palette. So it is completely synthetic. But I was actually having dinner with a certain somebody on deck who was noticing that she was saying she couldn't actually differentiate between the real soundtrack that was going on around versus what was coming out of the speakers. And I thought, well, that's an interesting thing to point out. At that point, it became a site-specific installation. I mean, where was the boundary between the reality and the actual track itself? So basically, I was just trying to paint an impressionist picture of what I was hearing. So we can listen to a little bit of an excerpt of this, if you wish.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was just to give you an idea. We don't want to lose all the listenership on a Saturday morning. So tell us what that was, John. You
know, I don't want to offend anyone, but I have some interesting neighbours. And I was trying to... I was basically getting across the idea of what can actually happen in Palm Beach, besides the fact that we are at one with nature.
Right,
and we are hearing the flora and fauna, but there is actually a people side to it as well.
Right.
Yeah. And it's, yeah.
So was that the people side, that sort of murmuring and...
Yes, indeed it was. Yeah.
Mm. Right, okay.
Do you want to get that?
Oh, great. Okay, well, we've got a last thing here from John, which is Woo-hoo-you-hoo.
Bit of 20s pop music. Near the end of my show, I realised that no one was listening, so I thought, let's have some fun.
Okay.
And I love recycling 20s pop music. You entertained me.
Yeah, no good. Okay, so here we go. Oh, look. I'm here with John Panther. That was a track called Yoo-Hoo Woo-Hoo. So, John, tell us about that one.
That was a plunderphonic using 20s pop music. And it's pretty much the art of sampling, but you see what you can put together and you take it into an abstract level. I was rather influenced by The Shining, Kubrick's The Shining there, and I love I love that filmic use of a certain period of music put together with the disturbing and the alarming and the horrific. putting together light and fluffy with deeply alarming and deeply horrifying and disturbing. Good
right.
stuff. Fantastic for a sunny Saturday morning.
Yes. Well, thanks so much, John, for coming in.
Well, it's my pleasure. And may community radio always support the extremes of all the community has to offer.
Well, exactly. I think we've got a good range of things, and mm-hmm. I think that show that you did was a good example of that.
Oh, good. Well, thank
so,
you.
So
yes.
Good luck with your studies. John's going
thank
off to study
much.
At university in a month.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke people, events and issues, brought to you by Island, art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, and I've got Richard Burke from the Anglican Church Council, and this year they are sponsoring the Mad Hatter's Party at the Onitangi Beach Races. So, would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Good morning. The Anglican Church does a lot of sponsorship or a lot of charity work and gives lots of money to various charities that come up abroad. Usually if there's disasters and things, we have a whip around in the collection. We didn't seem to do very much on the island for charities, and the old adage of charity begins at home sprang to mind. And the opportunity came up to sponsor the Children's Mad Hatters competition at the Onitangi Beach Races. And a Mad Hatters competition is where the children go and build some hats in the library and bring them to the wet races, I think it's about 10:30 on Saturday, to be judged. And they have a little tea party with fruits and drinks. And I think there's a procession with the Mad Hatter.
Right. Okay. Lovely. And that's organised in conjunction with Tanya Batt, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. Lovely. So that's the Onitangi Beach Races, and Waiheke Radio will also be a presence down there. We were down there last year reporting on it, so even if you were unable to make it to the beach races, you could tune into Waiheke Radio and listen to what's going on. So while I've got you here, the Anglican Church, you guys are in the process of building a new building?
Yeah, well, we're beginning to seek resource consent. We've decided that we need to build a new church. The one had in Onirua, as probably everybody knows, has been sold, which I think was to build a library. But the council, I think, was going to build a new council block there for their admin office. We decided to build a new one. We thought, Onitangi would be a good place. We've already got another church down in Onitangi, which is St. Andrew's, and we'll probably end up selling that. And we decided that let's build a new one. So we bought a couple of plots of land down on Onitangi Road, and we're building a new church, which will hopefully be in for Easter next year.
Oh, okay. And what's the need to build a new church? What's wrong with the old churches?
Well, the one in Onitangi, the one in Onirua was sold. I'm not quite sure of the history of it, but it was sold. And the one in St. Andrews, it doesn't have the necessary facilities. So basically we're building a church and a church hall, which is what you probably call a community hall, which is going to be big enough to hold small local events, small groups like mothers and children, mothers and toddlers, those sort of groups, wellness groups, pretty much anything that churches tend to support. One thing is in Britain, I don't know about here in New Zealand, but the church tends to be the centre of the community in Britain, or did until recently anyway. And what we're trying to do is put the church back in there, because a lot of people, I'm sure, don't even know we exist. And the church should be doing things to help local communities. Mm. So we should provide facilities, as in the new church hall, and support things like the Mad Hatters. We're also going to be supporting the skateboarding competition. We're going to be sponsoring some cups for a competition in the upcoming year.
Okay. So talking about that, a church and community, I am not a Christian myself, but what kind of participation is there from the local community? Like, do you have a certain number of people that come regularly, or...?
Well, the parish has a number of congregations. We have a service at the moment on Sundays at 11:15, which is held in the Catholic Church in Onirua, or Little Onirua, simply because we don't have a church, major church at the moment. We also hold services on Wednesday mornings, about 10:30, and that's in St. Andrews and Onitangi. So we've got two congregations, and yep, people from all over the island come to those services on Wednesdays and on Sundays.
Mm. So how many people tend to come to
it? It varies from between 20 to 50,
right.
Sometimes more. We did a Chris Dingle service, children's service, on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And that's run by the Sunday school teacher, usually. And we usually get a full church then, quite a number of people.
Right.
Edging up 80 to 100 people arrive then for that one. And they get to build a Chris Dingle, which is an orange and ribbons and sweets and a candle, which represent Christ.
Okay.
And they love the world.
Lovely. And do you sing carols as well?
Yes, yeah. They sing carols and some of the newer songs which children sing.
Mm. So is this part of a whole new initiative from the church then, this this idea of sponsoring the Mad Hatter's Party, the church hall? Are you is it part of a new initiative to reinvigorate the church on the island?
The church has been planned. The church building has been planned for quite a while. I'm the facilitator to build that church, so I'm sort of project managing some of it. The Mad Hatter's is a new. It's just a new concept we want to do in order to do something for the local community. And since we're building a church in Ntangi, what we thought we'd do is sponsor the Mad Hatter's competition, and then we'll put, when we get the new church building, we'll put a plaque up on the wall with the winners each year, and children can come in and see their names up on the wall.
Mm.
And it'll be an historical view there. And supporting the skateboarding competition as well. So we need to do more in the community. After all, the church, as I said earlier, traditionally had a very pivotal role in the community, but seems to be lacking these days, and we need to get back in to do that.
Right. Okay, so you said you didn't know very much about the selling of the land in Oniroa. Do you have any opinions on the fact that they're building a combined church and service centre on the land?
I don't think they're building a church and service centre.
Building a church and service centre. A library and service centre, yes. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I can't speak for the church itself, although I'm on the council, I'd need permission to represent the council.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Well, my view is that it was, and I believe probably the church's view, is it was promised to be a library. The idea was we sold the property and the land, so something for the community could be built. And that seems to have been reneged upon with them building the council offices. It seems they've got a prime location to build some lovely new offices when they should really be building the library, as was promised.
Mm.
But that's my opinion, and I can't speak for the church.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I have to say, that goes along my opinion as well, that I did understand that it had been gifted for a particular purpose. I mean, my concern is that, you know, you've got something which is essentially administrative. Lots of people coming in cars, four-wheel drives, you know, subcontractors with vans, coming into the council all the time to ask information, combining that with the place which is really an arts and culture centre. And I think it's really important that we keep those two spaces separate. But, you know, again, that's my personal view. I also think it's important that we respect the consultation process, and there's been quite significant consultation process about where the library should be built, how it should be built, where the service centre should be, and you know, the decision was that the library should be here and the service centre should be in Ostend, and it seems a real shame that none of that's being taken into account. And not to mention that the library that will be built is actually much smaller than the library that was initially planned, so that does seem like a shame, doesn't it?
It seems to be. I mean, that's just the way the council seems to run things. They just ignore what people are telling them.
Yeah.
Time and time again, it seems. Look at the wastewater thing. I mean, that was ludicrous. Mm. Not the wastewater, sorry, the
rubbish.
The rubbish, you know, the tip down the road.
Indeed. So maybe running things seems like a strong word, really. Perhaps mismanaging might be a more appropriate. Oh, well. Anyway, we won't get into a diatribe about that. But, hey, listen, thanks very much. And we really look forward to the beach races, and kids can go along to the Mad Hatter's party and the hat-making thing. Did you say the hat-making was being done at the library?
It's been done at the library. I think it's already been complete or is going through this week.
Okay, right. But in any case, I'm sure you could just make your own hat and bring it along. And then there'll be lots of activities for kids. The Mad Hatter's Party is one, but there's usually sandcastle building down at the down on the beach. There's usually some sort of treasure hunt. There'll also be lots and lots of yummy food, and of course watching the races. I mean, horses on the beach, what can beat that? It's amazing. I like the tractors as well. They always look quite looks like quite good fun. Although there's always one person who seems to have a V8 tractor that takes off ahead of the pack and pretty much wins every race, but maybe that's just an illusion.
Well, those semi-aquatic boats, ones with the wheels on.
Yeah, the sea legs.
Yeah,
that was really exciting last year, so I guess they'll be back again. Okay, well, lovely. Thanks so much.
Can I just reiterate the times of the services?
Yep.
We do have a service in the Catholic Church every Sunday.
So this is the Anglican Church?
This is the Anglican Church. We share the Catholic's building at the moment. We have a service every Sunday, 11:15 in that church. We have a service on Wednesdays, 10:30 in Onatangi at St Andrews, which is opposite the garage. If anybody wants to come along to those two, you've been more than welcome. Sunday, we do have a Sunday school or a Sunday club, which children are welcome to, up to the age of probably 13, 14, 15. And there's a Tuesday club, which is run by the Sunday school teacher, usually on Tuesday evenings, around about 6:15. And that's all about fun, games and arts and crafts, which is quite a jolly time for the children. So anybody wants to come along to those things, you can either look at the back of the Golf News where the number, phone numbers are, or just pop along at those times.
Thanks very much.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekiradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.